Anthony Giordano's new play, The City of Conversation, looks at American politics from an unusual perspective, that of a Washington hostess who brokers major deals around her dinner table. It stars Jan Maxwell as Hester Ferris, a woman who's forced to choose between her political ideals and family loyalty, and it follows her over the course of 30 years, from the end of the Carter administration to Barack Obama's inauguration. Both the play and Ms. Maxwell's performance have received rave reviews, and the show has just been extended for the second time at Lincoln Center's Mitzi Newhouse Theater. It's going to be running until July 26. Maybe it'll be extended again. I'm delighted to welcome both the playwright, Anthony Giordano, and its star, Jan Maxwell, to our show today. Hi.
Thank you. Thank you for having us.
Yes. Jan, what kind of woman is Hester? What drives her?
Well, I think that she was a woman who, in the 60s and the 50s and 60s, women didn't have that much power. I think she's a woman who came from money. She came from a small town in Arkansas, and she came from some money, and then I think she married into some money, and through her husband, who we never see, started this. It was kind of the Kennedy era, and these dinners were had in Georgetown, where all the big people would come, all the movers and shakers, and policy would actually somewhat be decided in those back rooms with those cigars, and the men would retire and the women would stay out of the back room while they talked about policy.
The women would go upstairs, the men would stay downstairs.
Yes.
And if, in a couple of occasions, women insisted on staying downstairs, and it caused trouble.
Well, there's a famous story where Sally Quinn tried to walk into the closed room where the men were going, and Averell Harriman, whose house it was, blocked the door and said, "You're not going to do this," and she stormed out.
Well, it's been suggested that Hester Ferris is modeled on Pamela Harriman, who was married to Averell Harriman after a rather complicated life. She'd been married to Randolph Churchill and Leland Hayward, and been involved with Edward R. Murrow and John Hay Whitney before she married Averell Harriman. Was she in your mind when you created this character?
Not so much. Pamela Harriman was more the sort of woman who came later to Washington and came more as an operative. The world of the hostesses really preceded Pamela Harriman. People like Susan Mary Alsop, one of the great hostesses we sort of studied in our research when we were rehearsing the play, was a woman named Nicole Alphand, who was the French ambassador's wife, gave these extraordinary parties where, as Jan said, business was done. So no, really, Hester is an invention based on really an earlier model than Pamela Harriman.
Didn't Henry James, talking about earlier, call Washington the city of conversation?
He did.
But the Washington of his day was quite different from what it was to become. Were they already having these kinds of dinners at the turn of the century?
Not really. The world of these dinner parties that the play is concerned with was really a function of the post-war world. So many post-World War II, so many people came out of that experience from the OSS and other organizations and worked to elect Jack Kennedy. So that was the heyday of that time when there were parties that Jack Kennedy would show up at to question Isaiah Berlin about the Russians before the Cuban Missile Crisis, which is referenced in the play.
One of the more famous hostesses was Elsa Maxwell. No relation, Jan?
No. Unfortunately not.
But if this were based on her, you would have gotten to sing.
Damn, I wanted to sing.
Is this the first time, Anthony, that you've written a play about politics?
It is. It is. And the play very much came out of an essay that I read 18 years ago by Sidney Blumenthal in The New Yorker called The Ghosts of Georgetown, where he wrote about the sort of vanish hostess class and these wonderful parties that happened. And when I read that essay, I thought, this is the subject for a play. I don't know that I'm the person to write it. I just thought about it and thought about it. It wouldn't go away. So tremendous research and a lot of thinking.
Would Hester have thought of herself as playing a major role in American politics?
I think she, yes, I think from behind the scenes, I think she has, she's competitive. She has a thirst for a passionate liberal agenda. And I think she gets a taste of that power, which, of course, not many women in her generation had. They always were beside the men. And I think seeing that power through the men and knowing that she had a part of it, I think was really what jazzed her.
But then she has to withdraw when all of the serious discussion occurs.
With the men?
Yes.
Oh, yes. Well, as one of the characters says, I'm sure Hester has her ear to the door.
But she describes these dinner parties as an arm of the government.
Yes. Yes. No, she's a... She's quite heady about what she does, and you know, she has seen history made as a result of being at a party or hosting a party, and I think that's thrilling. Mm-hmm. I think that's thrilling for her to know that she's a part of history.
She brought the right people together.
Yes.
Hester is very particular about her dress and grooming. How much do the costumes by Catherine Zuber help you get into the character?
Oh, enormously. Catherine came in with such a wonderful costume plot for Hester, and I just, you know, when I first saw the sketches, the first rehearsal, we usually have a show and tell, and the costume designer and lighting designer and set designer come in and do a little show and tell, and she was just so spot on. I really, really do appreciate it. It's the highest compliment to a costume designer when you put on an outfit and you go, there she is.
Mm. It helps you become the person you're going to play.
It all comes together. You've done all the inner work and everything, and then when Tom Watson did the wigs, and you just you put this on, and you go, oh, I'm so relieved, because the opposite can happen sometimes when you put on a costume and go, I'm not feeling this at all. So to have it so spot on and so perfect was such a luxury.
When the play opens, Hester's son Colin, played by Michael Simpson, has just arrived home from college with his girlfriend Anna Fitzgerald, played by Kristen Bush, on the eve of a major dinner party with the senator from Kentucky and his wife. Why is this event so important to Hester?
Well, this is a vote. They're trying to oust a federal judge who was appointed by Jimmy Carter. They're trying to make it a benchmark that you can't belong to all white country clubs, and that's the big thing. And Teddy's about to run for president of the United States, and we feel that if we can secure this conservative vote, the Senator Mallinay from Kentucky, that Chandler, who is my lover and partner in the play, will have a chance at the cabinet or the vice presidency.
When you say Teddy, you mean Teddy Kennedy.
Yes.
And it's very much the sort of thing that used to happen at these parties, that a woman like Hester would bring together the senior senator from Virginia, who's a Democrat, and the Republican senator from Kentucky, and they would smoke cigars and drink a little brandy and talk about the vote in utter privacy.
Would Republican women have been doing the same thing?
You don't hear so much about that. There was a sense in my research that, you know, Washington, D.C. at that time was a very Democratic city. It was the powers that be were essentially Democrats. But you did hear about the wife, for instance, of the one of the senators from Kentucky who was a great hostess. So it would have happened from time to time.
Anna, the girlfriend of your son, gets off on the wrong foot when she asks Hester to let her watch her dress after the party. Why is that such a faux pas?
Well, I think Hester has a Herculean ability to read people. And she sees, as soon as she lays eyes on her future daughter-in-law, she knows what's going on. She doesn't know exactly what her politics are, but she knows that she has come here to be a powerful player in Washington, D.C. So, it's just one of those things where I know who you are because I was who you are.
On the other hand, she can't come down too hard on Anna because she doesn't want to estrange her son, who's obviously taken with this woman.
Right. But I think that Hester thinks she's got a pretty firm hold on her son no matter what happens.
And then after dinner, Anna does what you're not supposed to do. She refuses to go upstairs with the other women.
Yes, she does. And she breaks that boundary and goes right in and actually has quite an effect on the result of the dinner party. She is able essentially to flip a vote. So it's an extraordinary thing we watch her do.
Because she happens to be conservative. Mm-hmm. And then the play jumps ahead to the Reagan administration, where Colin and Anna are now married, have a young son named Ethan. And their relationship with Hester is not the best at this point.
Hester has by then, and one of the things the play tries very consciously to do is track what would have been the natural progress of a woman like Hester from the position of hostess to political operative, which is where Pamela Harriman mm-hmm. comes in. Her dinners in Washington, legendary, were always for a purpose, to raise money, to raise consciousness of an issue. So by the second act, when Hester is working to defeat Bork, she has become something different. She has become someone who's actually operating on her own, not just giving parties.
We wonder whether Colin has become a conservative Republican out of political ideology or because he has married Anna, who is a conservative.
Well, I think I say in the play, you know, to my son, you've fallen for something. I think, you know, she's a very attractive woman. They were off in London, the London School of Economics. She was talking in a way that he had never heard me talk, and also it was the opposite of what his mother was talking, and I think that is somehow very seductive to a young person hearing different ideas than that they've heard at their house. So I think it piqued his interest, and she's a persuasive speaker.
Well, we get the feeling that Anna is the dominant one in their marriage.
Oh, yes.
But at the same time, I was very concerned and interested in exploring the way a certain kind of young person at the end of the 70s might have been drawn to conservatism and drawn to Reagan because of the darkness of that era. After Vietnam and Jimmy Carter's malaise speech, Reagan coming in and saying, you know, we don't really have to be so depressed. There's reasons to hope, and all of the things that Reagan represented. What would that have been like for someone young enough to take it in?
You even include the malaise speech.
The malaise speech opens the play.
The final scene takes place on the night of Barack Obama's inauguration in 2009. Colin and Anna's son, Ethan, has grown up and has become an Obama supporter. So we're skipping generations.
Mm-hmm. Yes.
Do you find this often to be the case, that the children of Democrats become Republicans and then their children become Democrats?
I don't think statistically that is true. I think statistically you kind of are what you come from. But there are rare things. Kristen Bush, who plays Anna and a conservative, she is a liberal and her parents are conservative. So it does happen, but it's much more rare in my experience and also in what I've read that the offspring goes too far from their parents' political beliefs.
And also, the character is gay, the character is a New York City school teacher, the character has an African-American partner. There is every reason in the world for him to have adopted a liberal perspective.
And in that final scene, Hester is no longer entertaining. Have these influential Washington dinner parties become a complete thing of the past?
You know, when I spoke to Sally Quinn, who came to see the play, one of the things she said was, Washington right now is so disappointed because these parties don't happen the way they used to, and the fun has gone out of them. Apparently, Barack Obama doesn't like to go to a dinner party, and there are people, I'm sure, who would like to host him. So it would seem that they don't happen, and Newt Gingrich, after the 94 Republican takeover, actually issued a directive. We're not going to socialize anymore. We're not going to be friendly anymore.
You get the sense that if somebody tried to go back to the old ways, that the gridlock right now would make it almost impossible. Whether Barack Obama wants to go to dinner parties or not, it doesn't really matter. People would go, would say, I'm sorry, I just can't break bread with those people.
Yeah, though Eric Cantor may be available for an invitation right now.
Well, as a newly hired lobbyist, I'm sure he will be. This seems to be a good season for political plays all the way. About LBJ just won the Tony for Best Play. Do you see some kind of a trend developing, or is this just a coincidence?
Well, I feel it's a coincidence, but I do have to say that after the show, people come up to us and they're just so grateful for a play about ideas, for a play about politics, for a play that actually encapsulates those 30 years of extreme politics and what
puts it in a different context also, because even though we witness it from the outside, all this stuff was going on inside the Beltway.
Yes. And it's just, I've just never seen an audience so effusive and so wanting to talk politics afterwards and going through their memories about Bork and being chagrined that, you know, we got Scalia and Thomas, you know, and just the, you know, the biggest idea for me, you know, in the play, you know, besides the personal, is that it, who sits on the Supreme Court matters, and it's so true, and the audiences are just so effusive. They're so involved. It's almost as if they're in the living room with us.
You think they're all Democrats?
Well, no, I have met some conservatives who have loved it too. So I think that Anthony does a great job of making the conservative arguments compelling and make sense, and you know, obviously, it comes down on the side of the liberals, but I really think people are thinking and are incredibly appreciative. So maybe theater may be cyclical as far as politics coming back into it, and it not being just a play about a movie or a musical about a movie.
Right. And I think we want that very much. We want to be able to engage with what's happened to us over the past 30 years. I'm too chicken to stay in the audience at intermission and hear what people are saying, but I sometimes ask my friends to just, what are people saying at intermission? And a friend of mine told me the other night that a couple in the seats in back of him got into a huge political argument during intermission. I said, great, that's what we want.
Well, actors usually tell me that they don't want to read their own reviews because it affects their performances. But it is nice to hear that you are getting people excited about the ideas in the play. Something else in the works?
I am a novelist as well as a playwright, so I am right now working on a novel, but there will be very much another play coming as soon as I have put the ideas together.
And Jen, what happens to you after July 26th?
They take me out back and shoot me.
Do they?
Yeah, it's just it's kind of a weird thing. It's in the contract. I had to sign it. I don't know.
She doesn't ever get to be in anyone else's play. I hold on to her for life.
I'm hoping to have a beautiful August and visit my family. And then we're waiting on a TV show for next year. So we'll see what happens.
Jan Maxwell, Anthony Giardina, thank you so much for coming by to talk about The City of Conversation, the hit play, unfortunately in a theater that has other plays always coming in. So I guess after July 26th, something else is already scheduled for the Mitzi Newhouse.
I'm not really sure what their schedule is.
But don't count us out.
Okay. And we thank you both so much for being on our show.
Thank you.
Thank you so much, Leonard.